Welcome to Bible Day at Trinity College of the Bible and Theological Seminary. I'm Braxton Hunter, and along with me is...
the guy who probably hadn't showered in a month, or at least a week.
Welcome to Trinity Radio with Dr. Braxton Hunter and Professor Jonathan Pritchett.
We're forgiven, we're shown mercy and grace, and our punishments probably aren't as harsh as they should be, even within this lifespan.
Do skeptics bring objections to the case? Of course they do. What's going on with you today?
They just don't like it. They don't like it that God is just and he has every right as creator to do what he will.
God is the best explanation for the beginning of the universe.
Of now y'all having to look at our faces, which for that I apologize.
So we are devoting today to talking a little bit about our plans. In fact, the next couple of episodes are going to deal with our verse-by-verse studies being carried out by myself and Dr. Pritchett. I'm going through the book of Genesis. In fact, I've been going through the book of Genesis for about a year now, although I've just started now releasing some of the episodes and on the YouTube channel. And I've been going through Genesis. Dr. Pritchett, what are you going to do?
1 Peter. I think we announced that already, that I was going to be doing 1 Peter. I'm a huge Peter fan. I'm a huge general epistles fan. I believe that if you want to understand anything else about the New Testament, you start there, at least theologically and so forth. Most of the general epistles, not all, but most of the general epistles predate the Gospels. They kind of coincide around the time of Paul's letters, but everyone seems to focus on Paul. And I think if you want to clear away all the clutter from just the enormous body of literature on Pauline theology, Pauline studies, the historical Paul, who was Paul, new perspective on Paul, the apocalyptic Paul, the old perspective on Paul.
Say Paul some more.
Luther and Paul, you know, the philosopher's Paul, all the Paul. If you want to get Paul right, make sure you get Jesus and the general epistles, right?
Yeah, so, and I chose Genesis for one really good reason.
It's the beginning.
In the beginning. I wanted to start in the beginning, and my goal is, I'm serious about this, I'm serious. My goal is that I will go through the whole Bible. Now, you might be thinking, well, then why am I doing the New Testament?
No, I'm not thinking that, because I want to go through the whole Bible, too.
The thing is, if I start now, I won't get to the New Testament for 10 years, maybe? I don't know. I mean, it's taken me a year to get to Genesis chapter 26, where I am right now.
Well, you also have a job.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing other things, and I really didn't touch it at all for most of this year. I did a bunch of it last fall. I think if I could devote like 30 days, and in those 30 days, I wake up and all I do is do this, I think I could knock a book like Genesis out in those 30 days. But I don't have that kind of time, and you have to do a lot of study before the recording itself.
Now, there's got to be another reason besides just it's at the beginning, because I want to go through the New Testament, but I didn't pick Matthew.
Yeah, Genesis is an obvious place for a Christian apologist who wants to do a verse-by-verse on the Bible to start. Obviously, you get to talk about the beginning of the universe right there at the beginning. You also immediately get to talk about some apologetic material because that has to do with the authorship of the book of Genesis. You know, I mean, it's just almost taken for granted by a lot of scholars today that Moses did not write the first five books of the Bible, and that this was written by at least four groups of Jewish editors. You have the J. You normally see it in books. You may not have known what this was. In a commentary or something, you'll see J-E-D-P or J-E-D-P or P-D. They sometimes switch the last two because they argue about who came first. For reasons that may have seemed good at the time. I don't know that they're that good
it
now.
It never seemed
well,
good.
Well, the original idea was nobody really questioned the authorship of the first five books of the Bible.
Jesus said Moses. Nobody should question it.
Right, until until just a few hundred years ago. It really was just a few hundred years ago that people started questioning this. And one of the reasons was They noticed that there wasn't good archaeological reason that they were aware of to believe that language was sufficiently complex or sophisticated to have a body of literature like we see in the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch being the term for the first five books of the Bible. If you're an evangelical Christian, you know, Jews would call it the Torah. But the bottom line is they don't. What am I talking about? Oh, JEDP. So yeah. So if language was not sufficiently complex to do this, then in Moses' day, well, then Moses didn't write it, right? What they didn't realize was that the Code of Hammurabi and the Rothschild tablets would be discovered in the early 1900s, which would show that even in the time of Abraham, there was sufficiently sophisticated language to have written this. Right. Long before the time of Moses, but certainly in the time of Moses. So it looks like Moses. But see, by that point, by the time that was discovered, you had this whole movement and a lot of dissertations and things like that written on top of this theory, right? Mm-hmm. And there'd been a lot of other reasons amassed for that. I feel like I'm talking too much. No. You have anything to say?
Yeah, it's still stupid.
So one good reason
But see, that goes to show, like, once you have something in print, by golly, this is the consensus of academia, and we're sticking to it.
Which is why you got to really appreciate someone like Anthony Flew, the atheist philosopher who, in the end of his life, he basically recanted everything he ever said. That is a huge thing to do.
Right.
You know, you got so much skin in the game.
And going back to Paul, Francis Watson, he wrote a big book on the new perspective on Paul. And then he came back and revised his book and completely repudiated what he said in the other book, because he came to say, no, I don't affirm much of this new perspective stuff anymore. We got to move past it. Norman Geisler is another example of a scholar who had published on abortion and Christian ethics. He reversed his position in the second edition. So it does happen, and we're glad that some people have academic humility and can say, well, I disagree and disavow what I had previously said.
So with the Moses authorship, some of the reasons... I mean, here's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
So you've got these four groups. I don't think any of them earlier than the 800s BC or something like that is supposed to have been when this started with the JEDP. And what they stand for is the Jehovist. We now know that it's probably should be Yahwist or Yahweh. Yeah. It's Yahweh, not Jehovah, probably. But Jehovist, because the authors used Jehovah or Yahweh instead of the term Elohim.
But there's too much in print with the J. They can't go back.
Yeah, they can't still J. With the J-E-D-P thing, they stuck with J because that's already what's in the literature for that group.
Yes.
E is for Elohim because the author used Elohim. D is for Deuteronomic because this was supposed to be basically the material in the book of Deuteronomy and maybe a couple other verses scattered throughout. And P is for the priestly tradition. So you have J, E, D, P. Now, why J and E? This I'll do this because this is sufficient to show the silliness of this.
Right.
Because it can't be Moses or any one author that wrote both the J and E material, because one author uses Jehovah for God and the other one uses Elohim for God. The same author wouldn't have used two different terms for God in the same writing, except for the fact that when Braxton Hunter prays today, like when I get on my knees to pray in the morning, I'll say Father, I'll say God, I'll say Lord, I might even say Master, you know, I'll say all kinds of things.
Or Yahweh.
God. Yeah, or Yahweh. Guess what? If you get my book, Core Facts, or any of my books, probably.
And you should get your Core Facts.
And you open it up, you will see more than one word for God.
See what I did there?
Yes, thank you. but what are we going to, what should we say then? If Core Facts.
Because I get a cut too.
I'll bet Leighton Flowers does it. I'll bet they do. I bet that we use more than one term for God in the same book. So if we're going to be consistent, someone 1,000 years from now who looks at my work, they're going to have to say, well, clearly one man did not write all of this, because over here he says God and over here he says Father. Well, shoot, they're going to have a longer thing than J-E-D-P because I use all kinds of words for God. So that's the kind of thing.
they're going to be talking 150 years from now.
Yeah.
Or 250 years. Listen, yeah. Far into the future if Jesus hadn't come back. They're going to be discussing the historical Braxton.
Okay. Well, it would be nice to think so.
And they're going to look at your Braxton Hunter may not have even existed.
Yeah.
Right. This could be
Deutero Braxton or pseudo Braxtonius.
Yeah. Because they're going to be, supposedly this man was the president of a seminary. So obviously there was an army of intellectuals.
Yeah.
There was a Braxton community.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were four Braxton communities.
Right. And they got together and published all this work under the guy who wrote Core Facts couldn't have written the Chronicles of Adonai. I mean, this is a
fiction book.
A thriller, you know?
Yeah.
So, no way. So
that's right.
So
this was pseudo Braxtonius.
But then the diehard believers are going to be like, well, we reconcile the Braxton of history with the Hunter of faith.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? that's how that's going to happen.
I love it. But the thing is, these are silly reasons,
yes.
Right? But you got to have these silly reasons. Another thing would be...
it's like you said about... what was it you said about the new perspective, at least on justification? You say, well, at some point, academia gets bored. And so
they got to come up with something.
So they have to come up with something to talk about.
No, honestly. I mean, honestly, people have to, scholars have to write dissertations. They have to write journal articles. So they have to come up with something that nobody's ever thought of before. So they come up with the most ridiculous of things. For example, in Genesis chapter, is it 26? Genesis chapter 26, I believe it is. Yeah. We've got the story of Isaac that mirrors the story of Abraham and Abimelech. Isaac deals with Abimelech. And is that the same Abimelech? Is Abimelech a title? Well, you'll have to listen to the audio commentary for the next several weeks to find out.
And you should listen to this. See what I did?
You should listen to his. But when it comes out. But the thing that I want to say about this is, so it says that Rebecca is beautiful. Well, scholars are like, this must be chronologically out of order. Whoever arranged this section should have put it earlier because, number one, Jacob and Esau aren't really mentioned. Esau is mentioned in the last verse, but that Jacob and Esau aren't really mentioned, and Rebekah is said to be beautiful. Well, if this happened after she had kids, how could you say she's beautiful?
Right. Obviously, the pinnacle of liberal scholarship is...
Right.
Ladies, if you've had children, sorry.
You're not beautiful anymore.
You're just not beautiful anymore.
Another thing is that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in verse 8, says, looked out through a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was caressing his wife, Rebekah. Now, obviously, if a man is being romantic, the point is he's being romantic with Rebekah, and Abimelech sees this. Now, it's not necessarily that Abimelech is a peeping Tom looking in all the windows.
It could be
that he's looking across the courtyard at a window. I mean, I can put one hand on the next house from my house and one house on my house, and our windows line up. So when I'm washing dishes sometimes, I'll see some movement. And it's not that I'm trying to see anything.
Right.
Your natural inclination is to look up. And I've seen our neighbors sitting there watching TV or whatever, and you're like, oh, shoot, we got to get some blinds or something. I didn't see anything nefarious, but it can happen. It could have happened with Abimelech, right?
Or it could have been a peeping Tom.
But this is what they say. They'll be like, look, Isaac is clearly being flirtatious and kind of fooling around with Rebekah. Therefore, this is early on in their marriage because older people don't do that, especially people who've had kids. Are you kidding me? They're not romantic. Are you kidding? This is the kind of thing that might come up to show that this comes earlier in the story.
Now, in fairness, it's not going to be too fair. There is, in the ancient world, okay, it's not like the modern world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of nonsense, trying to say, well, we don't mean that generally. We speak in the ancient world, after they had kids, they were no longer considered beautiful.
Yeah.
The evidence for that is...
Right.
What?
Right. Well, we know, even in the story of the patriarchs, that Sarah at a much older age, is considered beautiful by Abimelech, mm-hmm. and he wants to have her for his own.
She didn't have kids, so she was still beautiful.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. Once you have kids, ladies, it's over.
Even though there's no real, I am a guy who deals in Bible backgrounds, and mm-hmm. sometimes I have to produce an enormous amount of evidence to convince people of what's obvious about the ancient world. That's not one of them.
Yeah.
There's no amount of evidence. That's just asserted. Because when you read that stuff, they don't give their evidence for that.
Yeah, so that's right. One thing that's interesting is establishing Mosaic authorship. I read these commentaries. They're like technical commentaries. And they take it for granted. You know, and what's kind of funny is, and I don't mean to be condescending to these PhD, double PhD scholars, but they're kind of cute. I mean, to watch them argue amongst themselves, oh, no, this is P because this and that. No, this isn't P. This is J or what. It's you guys can't even agree with each other, you know, about what's going on here. It's ridiculous. Anyway, but the Mosaic authorship, the creation account, you get to talk about some apologetic material there. The age of the earth comes up in, I think, lecture two. Lecture two.
Not that chestnut.
It's already there. You can go listen to that right now as of this episode. There should be four or five episodes available by now. And I've been really excited to see people commenting and asking questions. I had one person ask the question, why do you think it is that Jerusalem is not prominent in the book of Genesis or not talked about very much? Well, interesting you should say, because this is another evidence that Moses wrote this book, right?
Right.
Because if it was written much later in the period that they say that these four groups of editors put it together, they could not have resisted to talk about the iconic city of Jerusalem, right? The centerpiece. But they don't talk about it. It doesn't come up. Why doesn't it come up? Well, because in Moses' day, why would it come up? It's just a Jebusite city over there.
Yeah.
Why would he be talking about it? Yeah. You know? So that's another good evidence, but that's a question I got.
Now, why should they listen to your thing on Genesis or even my thing on 1 Peter? As opposed to, you only have so many podcasts, so much time in a day. Why give them a personal insight into why this?
Well, maybe they shouldn't. I don't know that they.
No, we're trying to get our views up. That's not an answer.
I mean, honestly, here's the thing. I don't care. Look. My thing is, I have an audience, that's, mm-hmm. I don't know how, it's not a huge audience, but I do have an audience, and I have people that, if I release a book, they'll buy that book. And I don't know that they listen to other people, and I don't really know, I haven't been able to isolate what it is about me that they want to hear, you know, I don't know.
But you're doing this more for, as much for you as you are for other people.
Yeah, so I'm just doing this because I have a theory that the best way to learn material is to have to teach it. Yeah. Because you have to learn it and be prepared for criticisms, and you have to know it clearly and all that. And, maybe they should listen to someone else. I list a bunch of scholars, biblical scholars, and then a bunch of apologists in it's in the description for every video of this mm-hmm. series. And I'm trying to be clear that, look, nothing I'm really, if there is, there's not much that I'm saying that's original. It all comes from somebody, somewhere. I heard, even if I can't tell you where I heard it, I know I didn't dream it up. Most of it comes from somewhere. And so I'm giving you all these names, just about everybody I can imagine that's influenced me. And with Steve Gregg in particular, I actually asked him, is it okay with you if I basically follow kind of what you did, you know, with being an audio commentary and kind of you just kind of go off on a rant about a different view here or there or whatever. And so that's a big influence. Maybe they shouldn't listen to me.
Yeah.
Maybe they should get a commentary by Witherington or somebody else, or get the background thing, although that wouldn't give them everything. Yeah, but maybe they should do that way. I don't know. I can't tell you that. All I can tell you is I want to know that by the time I die, which may be as long as it takes me to complete the whole Bible, I want my children and anyone who appreciates my ministry to be able to have basically all of it. You know, what did he say? What does he have to say about all of this? Because I think I'm going to do a decent job.
You know? I think you've done a decent job.
And I feel the same way about you. Otherwise, I wouldn't agree for us to do this together,
right,
and let you have arguably the more immediately relevant half of the or section of the Bible, right?
Well,
the
New Testament. Yeah, well, the New Testament in general, but I am starting with 1 Peter. It's one of those things for me, and here I'm telling you, you should listen to me. I'm not as, as modest as he is. No, and here's why. We have students at Trinity. Some of them have gone to other schools and then transferred here or come here for their next highest degree or whatever. Some of them just, you know, start with us and end with us. But I guess I'm a, when I started getting, when you get positive feedback that somebody, because once you get a certain level, let's say master's degree, you start to feel like you know something. And if you've had good training, you do know something.
Yeah.
And for people like that to tell me that they gained something, if it's one thing or five things from any lesson that I give, I feel like I've contributed something to someone that they didn't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so I don't mean it when I say you should all listen to me, even though I kind of mean it. But I'm just saying, one thing I because of the feedback that I've gotten on my classes from students who have gone elsewhere or who begin to say, you know, growing up in church, hearing sermons, whatever, there was something in that that I never got anywhere else. And they know, because of all the references that I give in classes, I mean, you just kind of have to do that, that not all of it is original to me, of course, just like you were saying. But, of course, different minds synthesize this stuff and present it in a different way. And so I think with yours and with mine, you're going to get something with what we're trying to do that you can't get anywhere else. And that's going to be literally our take on it.
Well, yeah. I mean, like one of the things I said, I answered this question in every description. I say, so why am I doing this? Well, because all these guys are influences, but I don't agree with any one of them on everything.
Right.
You know, and not only that, if there is a guy out there who I agree with on everything, I don't know who he is, but even there, I don't know if he explains things as well as I do. Now, everybody should know, I don't brag on myself much.
That's why he pays me.
I'm bragging on me that I don't brag on myself, right? That's right. That's the thing. Yeah. But honestly, I don't. I want humility to be a real thing, an aspect of who I am. But I will say one thing I've heard, you're talking about people with classes. Yeah. One thing I've heard is that I'm good at, my wife agrees on this. If my wife agrees, then it's real. You know? but
I know how that goes.
Then I'm good at taking really difficult ideas and stating them somewhat simply where people can understand them.
Right.
And so I think I'm bringing that to the table. Now, I do want to say, like, I worry sometimes. There are moments in my own lectures on Genesis where I'm thinking, I'm saying this so closely to how Steve Gregg says it, or I'm saying this so closely to how Gordon Wenham says it, or whoever, that am I just aping them completely here? But you know what I found? As you look at various commentaries, everybody pretty well covers all the same stuff.
Right.
You know, and occasionally one guy will have an insight the other guy doesn't have. So it's all just out there now. I mean, you're talking about a thousands-year-old document. So I think the putting it simply thing is the main thing I'm trying to bring to it. And then the apologetic material. Because I don't know of an apologetic verse-by-verse like this that is audio. I don't know if one exists. An audio verse-by-verse with an eye toward you of defending what it says, too.
Yeah. There is a commentary series that Holman has started, and I think it was...
but it's not
Gospels
an audio.
And Acts. No, it's a book. It's a study Bible type commentary, apologetics commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, it's not audio. Mm-hmm. But when one volume covers that much, you don't get, and no disrespect to the thing, it's wonderful. I've read it, and it's very useful, and it's a good resource to have in your toolkit of resources. But it's not to this depth, you know, because even if we're talking about making it simple for when you're talking about verse by verse, You know, obviously, if you were to transcribe that and put it into a book, it's going to be massive.
Way longer than a commentary. Yeah.
Yeah, even.
And I'm a big believer in, I've said this before, like you said, before YouTube, when we were just doing this as an audio podcast, I've said before, I'm a big believer in audio learning. Learning via audio materials, listening to debates, listening to audiobooks, listening to lectures. There are certain people that don't learn well that way. I learn well that way. If you're the kind of person that best learns by reading, great. Read whatever you want. There's 1,000 commentaries out there for you. But there are people like me who like to be able to listen to something while they're working out or driving or walking or whatever. And this is for you. This is your thing.
Yeah, I was talking to one of our fans and one of our friends. I should just call him friend. When I say fan, it makes him sound like he's one of our little people. Then I don't mean that.
Our fans are not little people.
No,
what are you talking about?
No, our friends. But our fans are our friends. If you're on Trinity Primetime Discussion, you're not just a fan. You're a friend.
Just say your thing. Okay.
Anyway, yeah. I was telling him, so if you get a Kindle version and you have the smartphone, then you get the weird robot lady talking to you. So you can still digest books that way, even if you follow along. So you're still getting it, you know, in audio format that way, but you're getting an academic book.
Yeah.
So I do that. I think I talk about that where I learned that trick in the last episode or 2 episodes or 5 episodes ago. Anyway, it's a good way to do it. I agree that audio is a good way to do it, especially if you are not a professional theologian or a working pastor. I know this sounds bad as an educator, but you don't need to look at all the, how they make all the sausage. You just need it. You know, it's like the same thing about with me. I don't need to read expository preaching book. People who are into expository preaching, or they are expositors or whatever, or if they're a preaching student in a seminary or whatever, they read that stuff that Eliot assigns. I don't read that stuff at all. I don't read everything. You know, if it's outside of my field, I don't bother with it. I need to listen to Eliot's lecture on it so I hear the gist of it. But I'm not going to go read the text he assigns. I don't care. I don't have the time to it either. The lecture is good enough for me. And I listen to your stuff, and I listen to his stuff. I'm trying to do better at listening to Chatham to try to understand something about biblical counseling. You know, I'm trying. But I'm never going to read a book on biblical counseling. I just say I have too much to read.
I had to last semester. It was horrible.
But I do know this. I love listening to Chatham talk about anything, because he makes it compelling. Yeah. And I need to learn something about biblical counseling because I'm the vice president of academic affairs that has a significant biblical counseling department. But I'm going to do it with audio.
With audio. And there's something about personal things. You know, it's like my wife told us, you need to have stuff behind you and around you that kind of, can they see Optimus Prime? Yeah. Stuff around you and that kind of shows people who you are.
Right.
You know, kind of because if you're reading a book, like, I don't know if you're like me, but if I don't know what the guy looks like whose book I'm reading, I Google him up and look at it. Like, what does this guy look like? Okay, I feel better about this now.
And if you can find audio.
So, I don't know why I feel better now knowing that that's what he looks like.
So when I was, you know, I pick away at Paul and the Faithfulness of God by N.T. Wright.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard his voice and I know what he looks like. So I read his books with his voice in my head.
Yeah, yeah, I do too. Yeah. But like, that's how it is. So with a podcast, with these things, you want to have stuff around you that, like these posters back here on either side. That one over there is a class I teach. This over here is a class Pritchett teaches. And these are things about us. This is our stuff.
And you can buy those on a t-shirt.
These are my sunglasses that I got from a wedding that we were at with Dylon Simons. but the thing about it is, you need to have stuff that kind of gives people a window into your soul.
These are sunglasses that appeared for our fans. They'll know, because I didn't notice them before until the last episode.
These
appeared on this, so I'm supposing,
because they're broken, you can have them if you want.
Oh, is that what? Well, I have sunglasses just like that, but yours say best man.
Is it this side?
Yeah, it says best man. Mine just says groomsman, because I wasn't the groom. We talked about that wedding,
but
as the inspiration of a show.
The thing about it is, I Should we keep glasses down? Okay. But the thing about it is...
You said that brown and black's no longer...
Well, you can do it with shades.
Okay.
But with audio, the thing about it with doing an audio lecture series, if you're reading a commentary, you don't know anything about this guy. You don't know who he is. You don't know what his stories are. Now, you will if you read like a lighter commentary, like I read that Gospel of John for Everyone by N.T. Wright.
Yeah.
That was much lighter. He goes into a story like too much. Like every pericope, he goes off on a story. But the thing is, with our audio commentaries...
That's why his academic books get huge, because he does that.
He does that there, too. But with our commentaries, I don't know exactly what yours are going to be like.
Boring.
But with mine, I try to go off about stuff.
Yeah.
So people know a little bit about you.
Well, for me, when it comes to preaching... People ask me, who do you listen to for preaching? Well, I don't listen to too many preachers at all, and then I get funny looks for that. Like, I should be ashamed that I don't listen to
preachers. I think it's healthy to do it.
But when I do listen to preachers, I always shock people. I listen to Won Jun Lee, okay? Mm-hmm. I listen to Paul Cooper.
Is that twice in one episode, Won Jun Lee, or is that the last episode?
That was the last episode. Okay. See, we're obviously filming this the same day as last week. So that was apparently I didn't shower, trying to keep the illusion up that we don't film all these.
Which one was the one where I became pseudo Braxtonius?
That was this one.
That's this episode. Okay.
See, once again,
Pritchett Prime and pseudo Braxtonius.
Yes, and once again. Since Roth is not here, and so the show is, I won't do it to Optimus Prime, but
don't knock Optimus,
but it's gone off the cliff.
All right, we're going to close it down now. We appreciate that you've been here listening with us, and we hope you'll visit us at trinitysem.edu, trinitysem.edu, and we'll see you next time on Trinity Radio.